Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Hello, bonjour. How are you? This is Nancy from the CrowleySerré.com project/blog, and I haven't been posting any podcast lately because I was not feeling good. I'm still feeling a lot of anxiety. I wasn't in a creative or inspirational mode. I did not have the strength to do anything besides worrying and figure it out what will be my next step. And to sum it up, I was in a slump. So as you know, I am a French Swahili speaker. So I really wanted to do that podcast in English. But if you do understand French, I did the same episode in French also. I wanted to record that podcast also in English because I want my message to be heard and hopefully understood and put in practice if some way, somehow you experienced or have been experiencing the same issues that I'm about to share with you. So a few months ago, I've been fired, and today it's official. I am a workless person. I don't have a job, and I'll be, you know, looking for another job or another position. Oh, another something. Right now, let me be honest with you, I don't know. I am in a mess because I never thought that I would need to recover from that failure. So to try to sum it up, but of course, if you contact me through email or by sending me a message or by going to my Facebook page, CrowleySerré, we can exchange views on that matters. And the matter is not only being fired and obviously losing a job, but to me, it was also about being harassed. Is that a good word? If not, please let me know. I was a victim of harassment, psychological harassment, and with all that surrounding the psychological harassment, meaning bullying, being bullied, betrayal, rumors, ignoring me, not talking to me, lies being spread all over the service. I did not call it harassment until I reached to a social worker, like, you know, the people within the firm that you can go to and ask for help. So to put that in context.
Context.
Looking at behavior in context.
Context. Indeed. Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Wednesday, January 25th, 2017. So I have been told. Number one, I know folks were concerned because they were not able to access the archive of the longest single episode in the almost 8-year history of the Cows, our live coverage of Donald Trump's inauguration. 6 hours and 30 minutes. And it took some time. Number one, it was so long, I ended up having to make it 2 separate podcasts. I couldn't even get the whole 6.5 hours as one segment. So the first portion, I think, is about 5 hours. And then the final part two is about the last 90 minutes of the program. But it is available. It should be in the iTunes feed. It should be at Black Talk Radio Network, Stitcher, all of the different locations where you access the Cows should be available. I posted it on Facebook as well. If you get confused or have problems, feel free to drop me an email or message or what have you, and we'll be sure that you can access it. Lots of audio. We got some of the live coverage of the protests at the quote-unquote protests, white looters and hooligans running amok in the nation's capital. We got some of the live coverage of that. We got live coverage of President Obama's final address before departing. I think we got the live coverage when he actually was getting into the airplane to exit. And just obviously a lot of listeners called in. And we got a lot of great audio, in my opinion, from the last 8 years, both from callers, from other people who have commentated. Hang on 1 second. Right on. A lot of great commentary from the last 8 years from President Obama, some of his speeches, some of the commentary that we've had from listeners and folks who dialed in over the years. So definitely something I'm glad we were able to do. Again, I felt, you know, like we had done something being on for 6.5 hours, and then I saw the Young Turks did 11.5 hours of coverage, which I do think is insane. I certainly do not think, you know, that was worthy of taking a half of a day to talk about Trump or anyone else being inaugurated. But 6.5 hours is there, and I think we put in some constructive, I think it was a constructive retrospective and live time analysis as things were happening. At any rate, the broadcast for today, give me one more pause as I see if I can add one of our other investors from out of the country. Let's see. Okay. Should have him with us as well. Our broadcast for today, we've been doing the Global Sunday Global Sunday Talk on Racism. We've been doing that for I don't know, maybe a year or so now. It's been, you know, a good number of a good bit of time. And we welcome folks from all over the world, non-white people from all over the world, to share their views on racism, white supremacy. They have counter-racist suggestions, observations. We got a lot of folks, you know, commentary from all over the world about the presidential election, and a lot of folks, you know, around the world who listened to this program thought that Trump was going to win very early on. So I've always, I think it's great. I think it's important to discuss racism, white supremacy as a global problem, and to share information with other non-white people. When we did the Global Sunday Talk on Racism for January, I got an email during the program from a black female, a black mother in Belgium. And she shared the podcast, a portion of which you heard at the beginning of the program. She shared a podcast that she was doing talking about her natural journey and her evolving understanding of racism, white supremacy. She was familiar with Mr. Fuller's work. And it was just, you know, really interesting to hear someone talking about the exact same problem on the other side of the planet. And I spoke to her in more detail last week. I thought she had a lot of just constructive information to share. I thought it would be great to be able to have her on the program and kind of share with listeners so that folks could hear. Global problem. We talk about racism, white supremacy. We shouldn't think of this as, you know, something that's a Southern thing or a U.S. thing, or, you know, maybe is a mild irritant in South Africa from time to time. No. Racism, white supremacy, the white race, the global white minority, they dominate the entire planet, no matter where you happen to be on the globe. If you have a sufficient amount of melanin, racism is going to be a problem for you. Doesn't matter how much money you have or don't have, how nice your house is, what kind of education you have, male, female, child, whatever the case may be. Non-white, particularly if you're classified as black, it's going to be a problem. Our guest for today, it'll be great. We'll get to touch on many of the different areas of people activity. We'll hear how she got heard about Mr. Fuller's book and some of her views on racism. Joining us live from Belgium, Miss Nancy Maluba. Nancy, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Outstanding. Did I say your name correctly, Nancy Maluba?
Correctly. Perfectly. Nancy Maluba. Yes.
Right on. Anything you would like to share with our listeners, either about the podcast that we heard at the beginning or just yourself, who you are, anything you think it would be helpful for folks to know about you as we get started?
No, just that I am still learning, just like Mr. Neil Fuller says. Please, if you hear me using words like that are confused, please let me know. But bear in mind that I'm still trying to figure it out, the context that we live in. Yes.
Right on. And you can flex some of your, verbal skill. You are an English speaker, French speaker, Swahili speaker, is that correct?
Yes. So I was born in Congo, and I grew up in Belgium. I arrived here at the age of 5. And basically it was speaking French or Swahili with my mom. But because at the time in the 90s here, MTV was only in English. And we do, we used to watch MTV a lot. So that's how we start to understand me and my sister English. And then I had the opportunity to go in the United States in San Francisco, where I was able to practice more English and to better my understanding.
Wow. We'll talk about your time in San Francisco in some detail as well. I guess just for listeners who have not seen you, you are a black female. Is that correct?
Yes, I am a black female. Congolese.
Yes. Right on. This program, Context of White Supremacy, I have unfortunately concluded that we are dominated by a global system of white supremacy racism. I use those two terms as synonyms, and I use the same definition for both terms. The definition I use is as follows. A global system of people who classify themselves as white and are dedicated to abusing and or subjugating everyone in the known universe whom they classify as not white. Do you think such a system exists? Do you think that definition is accurate?
Yes and yes.
Concise. Always love it when we get that. I guess to start, like, what age specifically did you arrive in Belgium?
So I believe I arrived in Belgium around 5. Wow. I was with my sister, but my mom was in Belgium because my parents divorced when we were younger. And we were still living in Congo. Me and my sister, my mom flew here in Belgium to look for better opportunity, obviously. And we came here in the 1990. Yeah. And of course, it was a big change. The weather, that's the only thing that I remember. I was so cold the first time that we arrived here in Belgium. Yeah, that's a painful memory also, because I didn't know that at that time that would be the last time that I saw my father, because he passed away in 2003. And we didn't went back in the Congo before. We just went back in 2012 for the first time. So after 20 years living our country.
My condolences for your father. I know that is difficult. And I can certainly empathize with the trauma of cold weather as someone who I really despise cold weather. And it's been like extremely cold here this winter. Cold is traumatizing. Like,
exactly.
I absolutely hate it. I loathe cold weather, so I can empathize on both counts. Was racism a problem? And even learning English from MTV, I thought that was important as well. I've talked to other people from different parts of the world where they've said the same thing, that they learned English watching television. I've heard watching The Simpsons, MTV, some of the wildest things you can imagine. Friends, that's how they ended up. And their English will be good. You can hold a solid conversation. Like, oh, yeah, just watch The Simpsons and boop.
Yes. At that time, we didn't thought that we'll be able to speak English, but all the time, you know, the MTV was just so better for me in the 90s, because it was about music, it was about showing artists. And right now I feel like it's Nickelodeon right now that owns the MTV channel. So you here in Belgium, it's always how do you say when people talk over French? It's not subtitles. It's the voiceover. It's only in French.
Oh,
so you don't even get the English at all anymore.
Like, it's dubbed. Got it.
Yeah, exactly.
Got it. That's
horrible. Back in the day, it was really raw, only English. So we catch up.
Fascinating. Was racism a problem for you? You got to Belgium at 5 from the Congo. Was racism a problem for you growing up?
Yes. So We arrive in a
little town called Nivelles, which is like 30 minutes from Brussels. And it's like the countryside, I will say. So we were the only, for a long, long time, we were the only two black in the school, me and my sister. So obviously I realized that I was different because somebody told me that, you know, I am black. And on the playground, all the children will often tell me that I stink, that I don't take a bath, that, you know, I have to go back home, that I'm a monkey. Yeah, really like mean children. I remember particularly an incident with my sister because from Africa, we used to do hairstyles with thread, you know, and so we would have the hair standing on our head. And my sister had that because my mom, you know, that's what we used to do. That's the traditional hairstyle for girls, for little girls. And my sister came back from school and she was crying and she was telling to my mom, don't make that hairstyle ever again, because people assume that it was, how do you say that? That it was like spaghetti or something like that. They really make fun of her hair because for them it looks like foods or something like that. And from that day, my mom decided to only do braids, which in the long term was bad because it cuts the hair, you know, especially in the front. So we get that habit of doing braids all the time on an early age, and that was damaging for our hair. But, you know, it was like, if I don't do that, then people are going to make fun of your hair. Like, oh, it's funny. Your hair is funny. And yeah. So very, very early on, we had to deal with racism. But we didn't know what it was. We just think that was just some people, you know, being mean.
Mm, wow. The hair issue is going to come up again during this broadcast, but that should be very familiar. One question I wanted to ask, based on your understanding of racism, white supremacy at this moment, January 25th, 2017, reflecting on the conduct of the white children that you were around in the 90s, who teach you about your hair and said that you stink, you need to go back to Africa, called you a monkey. Do you think those white children were ignorant about racism?
No. I think now reflecting, I think that they knew, because to me, I didn't know that I was black before somebody came and tell me that something was wrong with my color, something was wrong with my hair, something was wrong with my nose. I did get a lot of insult about my nose being a child, yeah. So I know that they are not ignoring. They were doing that on purpose to mistreat.
Context of white supremacy. I feel like, you know, I don't know where our listeners, their understanding of world history and as it relates to the context of racism, it certainly could, we could do this in workplace racism. Nancy talks about some of her experiences there, but I think it would be good to have that information early on. Just if you could kind of give, it doesn't have to, not, this isn't a full history class, but I think it's important that listeners know about the relationship between the white people from the area of the world known as Belgium and the area of the continent known as the Congo. I think that's very important as we move forward in this conversation. Just what information would you like to share with listeners about the history of that terroristic relationship?
I would like to say that for many, 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 many centuries, on the continent of Africa, in the country known as Congo, we've been first, it wasn't a colony. It was first a private property of the King Leopold II. So he decided that he wanted a piece of the African cake, and by accident, or you know, by searching, not by accident, because he really, really wanted a piece of that cake. He had the Congo, and just like your own garden, you do whatever you want, and he did whatever he wanted. And that's the moment where the cutting hands started. Then he died, and in the 19th century, the Congo was given, put that in brackets, to the Belgian government, and they tried to shift the narratives and say that now we're going to do things better. It's going to be like the best colony that you will have. We're going to teach those savages, put that in brackets again, that they can be civilized. But then they discover all the minerals, because at first it was only the rubber that was discovered, and well, discovered by them, and that was a big interest. And after the Belgium took back the colony, it was about, you know, diamonds and other minerals that could benefit Belgium. If we took the independence in the 1960 with Patrice Emery Lumumba, but that's a lie. Since I will say the first man that owns Congo, Leopold II, I mean, we've been in a total disaster. The country is suffering now from the colonization. People are lost. I was there in June, and people are still in the Jesus coming back. Yeah, to sum it up. Wow. Jesus is coming back. Yeah, kind of mine. To tell you how much they are not thinking any further. It's all about going to church and giving all your money so Jesus will save you.
Devastating, the system of white supremacy. We have, or I guess number one, I could even pause since the monkey thing is constant. We've been talking about that with all of that. I'm so glad the Obamas are gone, because now I don't have to see any more racist monkey images about Michelle and Barack Obama. But yeah. Ada Benga, I think, was just the anniversary, or I think it might even, it's close to the anniversary of when he committed suicide, but he was from the same area, the Congo, as they call it, and they brought him here and put him in a cage and just, you know, terrorized him some more. But folks can check out, there's lots of literature. I mean, this is a historic example, all of them are, of racism, white supremacy, but I mean, they terrorized the black people in that region of the continent so terribly. I think they cut their population in half. I mean, we're talking about like 10 million people killed in an extremely short period of time. And then, you know, took photographs of chopping off people's hands. And I mean, man, like you cannot even imagine. And then going all the way up Patrice Lumumba. Lots of research you can do on that area of the world. And the way, and all of that brutality, all of the wealth and opulence that Belgium has enjoyed at the cost of probably 15 million black people killed and who knows how many butchered, tortured, terrorized, you know, along the way. But that is just a snippet of the relationship between Belgium, the Congo. So back to you, and I guess was any of that discussed? Because you went to school in Belgium, so was any of that discussed while you were in school?
So, again, I was just here in Belgium living my life, and at school, I was 17 when for the first time it was mentioned in the history book, just one page. And after that, at college, we did, I would say, discuss, but basically it was the teacher giving her point of view, saying that Mobutu was a bad guy, that Belgium did everything they could to help Congo, and she will always look at us when she was saying all those kind of things and assume that we will know everything about the African in general story. And we didn't. I mean, I was really ignorant about my history. And I want to mention that today in 2017, it is still a discussion that we don't have on the public space. Yeah, we all know that Belgium colonized Congo, that there was that thing with the cutting hands and everything, but it was just back in the days. Now it's okay, it's all fine. You guys are free, so it's still like nothing happened. Get over it.
Very common refrain when talking about the terrorism and rape of Black people anywhere in the universe. Get over it. That happened a long time ago. Tired of your complaining, you lazy, trifling, good-for-nothing monkeys.
Exactly.
So you get to Belgium at 5, go to school, endure the racism as a child from these young racist hooligans. Mm-hmm. You end up, as you get older, going to San Francisco to be an au pair. How did that decision take place, and what was that experience like?
So I finished school in 2010, and again, me and my sister really wanted to have the American experience, especially me. I wanted to go into the United States and be able to see what I was seeing on TV growing up, like all the stars, because everything feels and seems to be better in the United States. And it was also the country of Martin Luther King. I was just amazed and really like, I want to have my American dream also. And I really wanted to stay there. Like, for me, it was just, you know, I'm going, I will see how it goes. And yeah, probably I will find a job there and work there. So it was really more about going to see, but to stay also. So we found that program because since we were doing babysitting when we were students, for us it was at the same time more affordable. And it gives us the opportunity to stay in a real family. So again, to experience really, really, really the American experience. So in 2010, in October 2010, me and my sister had the chance to match with two families in San Francisco. So it, even if I was scared because I would be away from home for the very first time, I was kind of comfortable knowing that my sister will be not that far. And we arrived in San Francisco, and it's bad, okay? It's bad because the minute I put my foot down, I start to see all those people not being really happy. Again, you have to keep in mind that I was that kind of girl, like, living in La La Land, okay? Everything was fantastic for me. I was just enthusiastic, and everything must be, like, better. But I'm just like, oof. People look like they're really, you know, working a lot. And then I take the flight because we first arrived in Newark, New Jersey, you know, next to New Jersey. And then we flew back. We flew in San Francisco. And in San Francisco, it was even the worst because that's the city where many, many homeless people are. So there was like a difference from what I thought it would be and from what I see. Like, people were not like looking at their best, I will say. It seems to me that people were working really, really hard, especially Black people and non-white people like Asian people. So I didn't really have the time to catch my breath because I had to work immediately in that host family. That was the deal. I knew that it was a contract. But again, the way that the agency sent me the, well, advertised for the au pair program was more like you will be in a family and you will share values and everything. No, it wasn't about like you're my stepmom or you are my home mom, host mom. No. It was about I'm your boss and you're here to work. And again, not every story are the same, but for me, my experience, and I can only talk about my experience, it was hard. So 6 months after working like more than 45 hours, around 40, 45 hours a week, which was like 10 hours a day, I was just exhausted because to sum it up, I was the help in the movie. I was the help, and I read the book at that time because the host mom gave it to me.
No way.
Yes.
Wow. What did she? Do you remember? She said anything? Was this like a gift or just hey, you should check it out?
She had like this how do you say a library in her home with many, many books, and she was just a fan. She was reading a lot, and I cannot really remember how or when, but I was just interested in the help. I think she mentioned it, and then she was like, yeah, you can read it. And I read that. And after that, you can imagine that I was not feeling that comfortable. And she was just saying, yeah, you can come next to us. You know, you're not the help and everything. And referencing my behavior, thinking that I was acting like the help. But the setup of my work put me in comfort position. It's like you live with your boss. You live with your boss. So I was always like not feeling natural because I'm in their home. I eat their food. I am under their rules.
Mm-hmm. How old were you at this time?
I was 23. Yeah, 23.
Okay. And about how old were, was it a white woman and a white man?
Yes. Okay. They were in their late 30s, early 40s, and they had twins. I worked a lot. It wasn't good because after 6 months, I asked for a rematch. And when she did have the call with the coordinator, she was just like, how come she's leaving and everything? I don't want that kind of au pair again. And the coordinator said to her, if you don't want that kind of au pair again, you shouldn't put her on over hours working. She was breaking the rules. because you cannot be with children on your own with, more than 10 hours. And sometimes they will go during weekends, and I would have to be with the kids. But the way they set things up, it was, you are at my mom's house with the kids. But the mom, so the children's grandmother, wasn't working. I was the person in charge. So with her thinking that, I was just like, so, okay, I can leave whenever I want then if I am at your grandparents', your parents' home. And then she won't have anything to say. But that was the kind of thing that I was in. And after 6 months, I had the opportunity to find another family. The working hours were okay. She respected that because I really demand that, not working more than what I should. But the context of the family was, again, you live with your boss and it's just what it is. So at that time, I was just focusing myself on visiting the United States whenever I had the opportunity and, learning and growing, which I did. San Francisco was the worst, but yet the best experience of my life because I was exposed to yoga, to well-being, to organic food. I had access to many, many, many documentaries. It opened my mind because one of the things that I want to say is I saw for the very first time a documentary called Born in America with the babies and all. They were giving that protocol to the moms, to give birth quickly, and the use of Pitocin, all those kind of medication, unnecessary medication, because being pregnant is not being sick. And that was the first time that I was introduced with the you can have a baby with just being with a midwife. And that's what I chose when I gave birth to my son. I had a midwife, and not only she was a midwife, she was a non-white midwife, which was important because I got the sense in that documentary that they were doing more harm to black people.
Yeah. Of course. Huh. That's a context of white supremacy. Again, our guest, Nancy Maluba. The whole experience. I'm glad that you emphasized with your au pair arrangement where you're supposed to be helping out this family and pitching in with some child duties, that it's living with your boss, living with your white boss at that, living with your and the whole family. just that. Oh, man, that's a... Yeesh, that just sounds terrible. That's one. The help thing, I'm still like, wow. You should be happy. I guess they allowed you to use the indoor plumbing, the indoor toilet, I guess.
Yes. So that's what she was saying. You are not the help because back in the days, like being the help was just, a different kind of experience.
Right. I thought it was important as well, her exploitation. And that's a pattern that I've noted as well. I don't know how comfortable most people would be just, ditching their twins at a young age and, to a stranger. You can, you look after them. Me and Bob, we're going to head out for the weekend. Like, what?
And they were doing that a lot.
See, I have said many times, and I'm just making a statement, I could be in error. I said this very close to when the Sandy Hook shooting happened. White people do not care about children. And I mean, they brag almost about their lack of concern for children. And I mean, you could just look at what they do. They brag. She would give a book where it's the same thing. A white woman who does not take care of her. And it's lots of white women who don't take care of their children. They find someone that they regularly compare to a monkey and say, here, mm-hmm. baboon, you take care of my child. I have, you know, card games to play, and we got to go skiing and shopping. Mm-hmm. You take care of my child, baboon, and make sure you don't use my toilet either. But take care of my child, and we'll be back, you know, maybe next week. I mean, they have done this for centuries. They brag about not caring about children. they didn't mm-hmm. Black people didn't set up that au pair program to bring over, you know, black people or non-white people from poor countries to take care of their children. That's not black people.
Exactly.
White people flaunt their lack of concern for children all the time worldwide. It either what I'm saying is false, and I'm just talking crazy, or you can just, you know, look at what's right in your face. Look, go read the help and see if these are white women that mm-hmm. care about their children. Now, did you get any?
Yeah, and just something that I want to add, because my sister took care of older children. There were five at that time. And now that I'm reflecting on that, the children were just so mean to us. They were saying to us that we were looking like poop, yeah. That we were ugly, so they were really rude. Rude children, but now I know that, you know. I know what it's called.
Practicing racism. White supremacy. Yeah. Those children in San Francisco don't sound ignorant about racism either, even the twins. Wow. Wow. Did you get an opportunity to have, like, contact with African Americans while you were in San Francisco?
Yes. I will say one particularly. She was nice. She invited us to her church. it was like, it took like forever, let me say that. Like, we were not like in our best place, me and my sister. But I met her at the City College because with the au pair program, you have like hours that you can take in the City College or... You know, but we didn't really go down in details. You know, we were just hanging out. But she was the, let me tell you that she was the first, the only, to me, normal black people. I mean, she was well dressed and she was beautiful and she was taking care of herself. But the other one, like, I didn't have the chance to meet a lot of, like I saw on TV, like, it was really far from that. They were, not to say that they were bad people, no, but they seem to be really struggling. Yeah, that's the word. They were struggling. Yeah, struggling. People that were struggling. I will remember on Fillmore Street, that area of San Francisco, like, still nice because it would be like, hey, beautiful. Hey, how are you? But some of them will be kind of crazy also. They will say to you stuff that you don't even understand, so you won't be like, hey, hi, because you don't know what kind of drugs maybe or alcohol they take. Yeah, but the overall feeling, it was they were struggling. And even the host mom say that to me on the MLK day, like, she really, like, you know, we still have problems. And I said, with who? With black people. They are still, like, you know, under.
I guess she took a break from reading The Help and their ski trips to reflect on the state of Negroes in America. How noble of her. That I think that's important because I think individuals classified as white in this part of the world, I think they've done a just a phenomenal job projecting the image, and especially now with former President Barack Obama. I mean, hey, African Americans are doing wonderful. These are the best Negroes in the world. Look at it. We've got a president, and they're making money, and Rihanna and Jay-Z. I mean, they have done a great job broadcasting that image to the rest of the world. Exactly. And then when you get here, it's like, oh, that is way, way far from the truth of where black people are.
Exactly.
Wow. How long were you in the States before you went back to Belgium?
I stayed for a complete year.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. I had the chance to go in New Orleans, and it was the same. Black people were struggling. We went in Miami. To Miami, struggling. I mean, the only it was in LA where we saw black people that were not struggling as much, but it was day and night. It was during the night, so maybe they were dressing up to go to the clubs, or I don't know. But this seems to be more like enjoying life, I will say. And the other was just, especially in New Orleans, you know, we were just here hanging out. Yeah.
Wow.
That kind of feeling. And we went also in the Caribbean, because we, at the end of the program, me and my sister, we had 2 weeks vacation paid from the au pair program, and we decided to also go and close our year in the Caribbean. And again, it was the same feeling, like struggling. And I remember asking myself the question, because we were on Virgin Islands, and it's from the British, St. Thomas, it's from the British. Like, is there any part of the world where British or French are not? Because they are everywhere, even in the Caribbean. You can still have the influence of the colonization.
Mm.
And the domination.
Absolutely. Global problem. So you spend a year, and even to be in New Orleans that close to when Hurricane Katrina and the levee failure, things got dramatically worse for black people in that part of the world shortly after your departure. You spent a year in mm-hmm. the States, were able to do some traveling, black people suffering mm-hmm. worldwide. You take some of the positive that you got in terms of being introduced to organic food and healthy eating habits and yoga, taking better care of yourself, which is phenomenal. And that was a part of your process with saying, hey, I'm going to do natural hair. Is that accurate?
No, it's not accurate, okay. But it strengthened my what I had before going in the States. I was always affected by natural thing alternatives. And so in 2005, I started my natural hair journey. I didn't perm my hair anymore. It was a struggle because at that time, being natural was not that popular. So it was through many trials and errors that I started to know how to take better care of my hair. So going in San Francisco in 2010 was even harder, because the price of the hair salon was really, really, really high. Like an example, just for getting regular braids, I had to pay like $17, and it was the cheapest. I had to search a long time compared in Belgium, where you just have to pay 25 euros. So even for my sister, we were, and she wasn't natural. She went natural in San Francisco because of the price of getting a weave or wig. And again, at that time, being natural wasn't that popular. So even on YouTube, it was okay, but
not now, like when you have like thousands and thousands of bantu knot tutorial or how to do your braids by yourself. And so my sister started her natural hair journey. I was already in that natural hair journey, and I was just getting more and more comfortable with my hair. But since I didn't have the time and energy to spend on my hair, I started a lark journey the sixth last month of my stay in the United States. So when I went back, when I came back, you know, I had all those information about organic food, about hair, about how to take care of yourself. And I reject everything from meat. I started a vegan, vegetarian journey also in the United States while I was in San Francisco. So I was just really rejecting every chemicals. I was just 100% natural, I will say, drinking only water, because I was exposed to all of those documentary. And again, I was seeing the benefit of getting healthy and taking care of yourself. So when I came back home for my mom, it was like a total change. Like, what happened? Before going, I was just that girl that was always snatched, makeup on. I was ready. I was just like so a girl. I was just like a girl. And when I came back, I was just like, this is bad. Those ingredients are toxic. I only eat like fruit and vegetables and drink water. And I don't eat meat. And she was just like, no, I want my daughter back. The one that is cute, those locks, you look like a homeless. Yeah, you look like a homeless girl. It's not pretty. What are you going to do? Because at that time I was engaged. What are you going to do? And as a Congolese, or maybe other people from different countries in Africa, we don't have a we have like a ceremony, like a traditional ceremony for engagement. So it's all about being like super pretty and looking like a princess, like Tiana princess in the Disney movie. And I was just not that girl anymore. And it was like extremely painful, because for the first time I wanted to reject everything that I was that I used to believe in putting makeup on and eating all those sugar and everything. But the reaction of my family, especially my mom, was extreme, and it was to a point that I did take down my locks. So I stopped my lock journey, and I was influenced by what she was saying, and I couldn't deal with that pain also, because I would say after United States, I was depressed, a lot depressed. Because maybe I saw that what I was seeing on TV was just a lie, and the workload was extreme. And again, living with the boss is just an experience that I don't recommend when you don't know how to put the boundaries and limits. And I at that time I didn't know how to put boundaries and to take care of my space. So I was really vulnerable. And again, now I wasn't a student anymore. I was demand to find a job, like to get in the real life. And that transition hurts me. And I had to deal with that also.
context of white supremacy, black mental health, very important, and particularly, mm-hmm. I think a lot of people can relate to that when they have, you know, attempted to do natural hair and, you know, say, I'm not going to eat a lot of crazy foods or I'm not going out and partying and that sort of thing, and having mm-hmm. family, close family and friends not accept or have a lot of questions or, you know, mm-hmm. want you to go back to the way things were, where they're not necessarily supportive of your new outlook, your new views and behaviors. I think a lot of victims can relate to that with regards to counter-racism and many of the things that you described. Like I said, especially the natural hair. I know we have a lot of folks that can relate to that. I guess in terms of the impact, you said just the workload and kind of realizing that it was all a lie, which you had kind of thought mm-hmm. was true, which you had seen before, and just the whole experience, the trauma of what you went through in San Francisco, that mm-hmm. it really impacted your mental health.
Yes.
What sort of things did you try to do to get your mental health back?
Really, at that time, I didn't know what was possible to do. But I do remember that my sister was trying to push me, saying to me that, you know, it's going to be all right. You just have to find a job and get back to finding, you know, and get your life together. And that would be okay. You don't have to worry. And I remember another friend told me the same, like, okay, now the study is done. And I was just like extremely fatigued. I was tired. And now that I'm reflecting on that, I was tired because I realized that, again, life will not be easy for me. Didn't know how to put that in context at the time. Didn't know that it was racism, but I know that it was that the lies were just starting to come. And I wanted to pretend a little bit. Okay, I just have to put makeup on and it's going to be all right. I just have to find a job and it's going to be all right. Which I did. I did find a job, part-time job. And I started to work at the Museum of Central Africa. So the Museum of Congo, right? They just changed the name, but still the same. And I started to work, so I didn't really have the time to think. But at that time, after coming back from San Francisco, so it was November 2011, and my first day at job in February 2012, I had that time to think. But I was cut in my thinking and started to work, and, you know, I just went with the flow. Still trying to protect my space, I will say. I will say, because having a mom, especially mine, she's still being, like, very, you know, she wants to make sure that I am the Nancy that she used to know. So she was really like, you know, you just have to do that kind of hairstyle. You just have to work to find those kind of clothes and you're going to be all right. In life, it's just about how you look, not what you feel or what you think. Life is hard, but you just have to, you just go with it and it's going to be fine. So, yeah, speaking deep and start to ask questions like, is that a feeling that it's hard? It's harder. But it's just like, yeah, no, we know that it's hard, but it's okay. It's okay. And no, it wasn't okay, but I couldn't have others that could think with me and start to put words on what we are experiencing on day-to-day life.
Context of white supremacy. I guess question number one, you said that your mom, victim of racism, but your mom, when she was saying, you know, she didn't like your hair when you were doing natural, had locks, and ultimately you kind of took your locks down after she kept pressuring you. Did you keep your hair natural and just took a different style so you didn't have the locks anymore?
So I kept my hair natural, but I was making sure to do many hairstyles that, you know, was possible. So always having some extensions with my natural hair, but less and less because I, when I had the job, I also moved with my my partner in my apartment, so it was just about me, because my mom, she's really she really focused on how we look, so she will always be like, now it's time to get your hair done, now it's time to look like that and buy yourself some new clothes. And she, I think at that time she started to feel more and more resistance because of my experience now in the United States, in San Francisco. I was just like, I don't need to do extra. I can just be me. Why I cannot just be me? Why do I have to all the time, like, go at the Taiwanese store to get my hair? And, you know, it's just like exhausting. Why can't I just have my hair? And those was the questions that I raised, because talking about time and energy, having locks allows me to focus on other things. I didn't have to think about my hair all the time. They were just there, and that was fine. But once you start to go back in that process of extension, everything, I'm not judging, but you do spend time and energy on other things. On your hair, on the process of finding hair, buying hair, and looking for a hairstylist that will put the hair on if you are not able to do it by yourself. So in my place, I was able to do that, but less frequently.
Mm-hmm. Mm. That right there, time and energy. Mr. Fuller talks about that a lot. And even specifically with hair, that, you know, we as black people, we have so many problems because of racism, white supremacy, that we really, as it, you know, relates to really hair and a whole lot of other things, sexual activity and a whole lot of other things, that we should really be trying to minimize how much time and energy we spend on, you know, non-essential things, given the magnitude of the problems we are facing. Speaking of one, Neely Fuller Jr., and folks need a code book or a word guide, hit the website producejustice.com. You eventually found out about Mr. Fuller and even got a book. How did you find out about the work of Neely Fuller Jr.?
So to sum it up really quickly, I found the work of Mr. Neely Fuller on YouTube. So because, you know, you have to imagine, I've been fired and here I am traveling with my mom for the first time in the United States and my sister. And, you know, during nighttime, you know, I will listen to videos on YouTube. And once you start to follow or to look for certain type of videos, and for me it was more about self-care, self-respect, conscious blackness and everything, and he will be like up next video of Neely Fuller, what is racism? And it was, the video was how to be successful, I think, of one of them. But I think that's the one that really catch my attention, because in that video, in that clip, he says, to be successful is to recognize your weakness. First, you have to recognize your weakness. And I was like, yeah, that's interesting. And then I started to listen to, and he was dropping some knowledge to me. Like, that was the first time that he was speaking on what I can do, you know, because we all know the problems that we have as Black people dealing with racism, white supremacy, but what to do about it? And I was feeling helpless at some time. Like, I don't want to watch any program relating to telling me more about how slavery was, or, you know, those kind of movie, because it's always the same. And I will feel like sad and emotional. And for the first time, it was just telling me things that what you can do about it and be more solution oriented. And I listened to it like for a solid month, videos on YouTube, and then I discovered that he had a show on Talk Tenement Radio every Wednesday, and I started to listen to it, and then I was just like, okay, I need the book. I really need the book. But on Produce Justice, it wasn't possible to have it in Belgium. So what I did was to ask some relatives in the United States to receive the book and then to send it to me. And it was very expensive. It was $50 just for sending books. And what was strange is the package was really like opened and damaged. Like somebody opened it and then they just put tape on it, and that was suspicious. Just books. I never had that. I had to mention that I never, whenever I order something from the United States, experience an open package. Never.
I know other folks who have ordered code books from Mr. Fuller's work, and mysteriously, the package arrived open or damaged. Some of these people are in the States, and Moses Malone, he was a guest on the program a couple years back. He's in England, and he wrote a book about racism, and he mailed me a copy. He was to review for the program. It arrived like totally open, like the books were spilling out, from the mailbox. So I have seen that. It is extremely suspicious, but that's the system of racism, white supremacy. So you go through all this trouble, get, you know, your family or friends in the States to mail the books to you at this great cost and everything. You get the information. Do you attempt to share your new ideas about racism with your family?
Of course. I'm like, oh, this is true. We have to do this and we have to do that. And I start to talk more and more about that, because I'm just that kind of person. Whenever something new happens in my life, I am really focused and I just want to share what I've learned. And sometimes it can be misinterpreted, because it would be like, yeah, you just discovered that and in 4 or 6 months it will pass, right? And here we are in January, so it's been a couple of months now that I'm talking and learning every day about the system and having some knowledge that I want to share. And I started to be, you know, really taking the time to think about whether or not I want to be around white people, starting to reflect on the relationships that I have with white people, and try to be more constructive on what I do first, basically. Because at that time, at the moment now, it's not about them. It's more about me. What am I doing to improve my life? What am I doing to save my time and energy? Do I want to spend my time and energy with white people? Or do I want to spend time with energy with myself and try to figure out things for me to better my life, to better what the actions that I'm doing, you know? So I start to share views with my sister and the father of my son. But it would be more like, yeah, we all know that it's a problem. But not every white people is a racist. And I agree, not every all white people are not racist, but how do you know that? And if there are good white people, how come we don't see the good that they are doing in trying to solve this problem? Because my surrounding, my associates, I do have white so-called friends, and I do have non-white so-called friends also. But it seems that we get comfortable in that system. Nobody wants to talk about it. And therefore, we are not really doing something about it in our day-to-day lives as individual, like asking questions and trying to get more understanding of what we are in so we can deal better with what we face, what we are facing.
That should sound painfully familiar for a lot of our listeners, wherever they happen to be in the world, who attempted to share information, views on racism, white supremacy with other family, relatives, friends, whatever it is. And, you know, that, hey, man, I'm not in a, or you are racist for bringing this up in the first yes. place. Very common experience worldwide in terms of trying to bring this up. How would they respond? Well, number one, I just want to make sure I point that out. When you start bringing up these issues and the response is, well, I don't think all white people are racist. That I always find interesting, because most of the time, no one has said, I think all white people are racist. It'll just be racism is a problem and, you know, we need to do something, blah, blah, blah. And somehow it immediately gets to, well, hey, there are good white people out there. That's just, you know, something that's interesting to note. But how did they respond, if you recall, when you said, well, how do you know that they're good white people? And what are the good things that they're doing? Like, how do we identify which whites are the good ones, the not racist ones? How did they respond?
I would say, like, no response at all. Like, you know, not everybody is the same. And we don't have to see bads in every person. Let's give the benefit of the doubt. And obviously I felt that I was the problem. I was being extreme. You know, I had second thoughts also, like, am I being too extreme? Am I being like them? Because, a white Nazi, like, am I doing the reverse racism? Like, basically, which I said that I am, I cannot practice racism. It's impossible. It doesn't exist. And again, it's for me. How do I found the right balance between what are the information that I'm starting to get and in my life, like, start to be, to put those information without being perceived as extreme, but it's logical. It's not, and I'm still emotional about it. I still have a lot of emotion, and I know that when you have emotion, it's hard for you to think logically, but I'm getting there. I'm trying to to deal better with my emotions so I can, you know, separate that from my thinking, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. That's a goal, you know, I strive for. I think a lot of us strive for as attempted counter-racists to feelings and emotions. They are important, but we do want to make sure that we're using logic as our guide when dealing with issues related to white supremacy racism. Not that feelings aren't important, but we do want to make sure that logic is helping us figure out what we're going to do, say how we're going to respond to try to solve this problem. Number one, if any of our folks listening in, I know we're on significantly earlier than our typical broadcast time, but folks that are listening in, if you're on the plantation or wherever you happen to be, if you have questions you would like to ask Nancy, feel free. The number is 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. I wanted to ask one of the subjects that we talk about all the time, and it's directly related to not only black mental health, but I think it also it kind of captures a lot of what we talked about in terms of the historical relationship between Belgium and the Congo, your increased understanding of racism, white supremacy, and then having a reassessment of individuals who classify themselves as white and your relationship to them and how that impacted you as well as you continue to understand racism just on the job. This is a situation that so many folks can relate to worldwide, just the trauma of being in a work environment saturated with racists. Can you talk about your workplace experience that led to the podcast that we heard at the beginning of the program?
Yeah, so I started as a administrative assistant, part-time. I want to emphasis on part-time because now reflecting, I know that it's part of destabilize myself, I will say, because I was on part-time for 2 years. I was working part-time for 2 years. But doing the work that is not suitable for part-time, I was doing more than a part-time job. And so because I was working more, and they required me to be there, so I will work like during the weekends, and once a month I will work there till 9 p.m., 9:30, because you will have those meetings that happens whenever nobody is in the building with the black people. So basically I was the secretary of a committee of African associations, because that was part of what they wanted to showcase, that we are in the 21st century, everybody is welcome now, we want more black people. So to sum it up, I was the showcase, because I was the only black person in my service. And in the whole staff and employees of the museum, I will say just there's five black people. For a museum of Africa, it's kind of questionable,
to say the least.
Yeah.
I guess number one, this would be a moment where I can insert, they have a whole, if they have a whole museum about the history of white terrorism on the continent, this would seem to be another indicator that white people are not ignorant about racism. That aside, this whole environment where they don't even have that many black people and are exploiting you, having you work part-time, but doing all this work and what have you, even though you're not being compensated as a full-time employee with all the, again, usurping your time and energy. When you first started out, And I guess you didn't have the same understanding of racism, white supremacy.
No.
Can you contrast like your behavior then to your behavior later on as your understanding of racism increased?
So I would be the one to always be like, yes, I can do it. Yes, I have to do it. Yes, thank you. I'm ready, smiling all the time, being ready to help for everything and anything, trying to do as much as I could because I was part-time and it was a contract that they will reevaluate if I'm still okay for the job, I will get another year. So, you know, it was that kind of environment where you don't know if at the end of the year you will still have the job. So I was just like, I need to give everything that I have so I can have this place and be in a stable position and grow, you know. I was thinking that I could grow, that I could have better opportunities, that I could have a full-time. Just to have a full-time was just like, oh, that would be amazing. So I was just like trying to give the best, but very confused because for some of the time she will, I say she because she was my boss, she will give me, you know, you have to look down all those information and make me a file and report to me. And I will do that. And then she will say, oh, I don't need it anymore. Can you do that now? Because it's urgent. So I was always feeling that, oh, damn, I'm not doing the work as I'm supposed to be. This is me. I am the problem. And I had my son a year after. So I was just even more like, oh, they still keeping me even though I had the baby. So I was just like, oh, thank God they allows me to be there. You know, because with motherhood, I will be like sometimes late, tired. But I was just like, oh, they passed. They are really nice. But at the same time, I was working also a lot. I was doing a lot for just a part-time job. And I was just excusing myself to have the work. It was just like they were God to me. Yeah.
Wow. I am sure a lot of folks can relate. And this comes up on Workplace Racism all the time, which is every Thursday. I know that's kind of late your time in Belgium, I think, with the time difference mm-hmm. and everything. It'd be like 2 in the morning. But that comes up mm-hmm. all the time where I've stated, you know, you can go in and work and try to say, I'm going to work as hard as I possibly can mm-hmm. and do the highest quality work imaginable. And if that means mm-hmm. I have to work, you know, extra hours and do this and do that and come in early and, you know, I'm gonna show these folks that I am a hard worker and I'm willing to do whatever it takes to sacrifice so that we can, you know, do great work. Mm-hmm. That doesn't count at all. They are not interested in
at all.
You know, oh, this is a hard. You are still monkey, ape,
yes.
nigger. That's it. Like, and we'll use mm-hmm. you as, for whatever we can get, and then you know, hit the road, monkey, whatever it is. That's. Mm-hmm. Exactly how things tend to go worldwide. And, you know, again, I'm making a statement. I could be in error, but I think if you tune into Workplace Racism, which is every Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 mm-hmm. p.m. Pacific, you will see that pattern where a whole lot of black people have said that they went in and worked hard and were diligent and dedicated. And we just had a black female who said she observed someone who was her mentor on a job who had worked for decades at a company mm-hmm. and did all this quality work and helped her along and devoted so many years of service, and they demoted him to a janitor. Couldn't even, you know, hook him up with a nice retirement package. Mm-hmm. Maybe he gets to retire a year too early for all that. No, we'll just give you a mm-hmm. mop and put you over in the corner there. That's about what you can expect in the system of white supremacy.
Exactly.
We had some folks who dialed in with questions. I want to make sure I don't miss them before we get to some of the other areas we want to touch on. The caller at 8910. 8910. Did you have a question for Nancy, live from Belgium? You should be with us.
Yes, I do, and I'm actually driving. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, yes.
There you go.
Good. Thank you so much. I'm a black female here in the U.S. I missed a lot of the program, so I just had a couple of really quick questions. I'm a mother. I have two children, one son. He's 5 years of age. I wanted to ask how many children do you have, and what are the ages and their gender?
So I have a black boy, he's 4, and I just have one, yeah.
And is his father a black as well?
Yes, he's black, brown, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I have not traveled to Belgium at all, but I wanted to ask a couple of questions. Your son may be young now, but does your son watch television?
Yes. His father is more like low-key. It's okay to let him watch 1, 2, 3 programs. I'm trying to be more cautious about what he does watch on TV. So for now, he's just watching, like, we got Netflix not too long time ago in Belgium now. So we only chose like the program from Netflix, but he doesn't watch like regular TV.
Yeah, the reason I asked that, and from what I read in just description of this program, I became more aware of racism and that I was really thinking about under a year. My son has experienced it, but my daughter. But specifically the television question I had, I struggle with that, and my husband and I, he's a black male, we're using TV, and we use a lot of Netflix to try to be careful. But I still find that those questions are there. And my more specific question is, are you familiar with the animated film called Curious?
Called what?
Kirikou. K-I-R-I.
Kirikou, yes.
I just remembered that.
Yes, I was telling that I did not yet let him watch that program because it's filled, that movie, because it's filled with stereotypes. So, yeah, no. I don't know.
Yeah.
Did you let your child watch it?
I did. I just discovered it, and like you, I was a bit concerned. There are some stereotypes. The person, I think the fella, the program is a white male. But, at the same time, I wanted to see what this was. I'm from the U.S. There are no cartoons about black people.
Yeah, I can understand.
Like, curious. Right, because of, the bare chest women and, Kirikou who has no clothes on. At the same time, my husband and I watched it, and even though it is problematic, in fact, my husband and I thought there were some counter-racist messages in them, but it's wrapped in a package that isn't. So I was just curious about that. And those were all my questions. But I
Thank you.
To kind of empathize with you because I my young son, 5 now, but he's 3 and 4. And learn more about racism to try to find out.
Yes, definitely. Thank you. Thank you very much for your question.
Let's see. The person who dialed in last 4 digits, 5771. 5771. Did you have a question for Nancy?
Greetings, Gus, and greetings, Nancy.
Greetings.
Glad, thank you. Glad you came onto the show to share your experience. I have a question. What was the name of the program that you went through to come to the United States again?
Au Pair program.
Okay. Did you have to have an interview with, like, say, somebody from immigration before you came here?
Yes. I mean, it was even prior flying in the United States, we had to go to the embassy of United States and fill, like, some files, and it was a long process and a costly process too.
Okay. What I'm getting at is I have been hearing, and actually I have relatives outside the country who come in here to the United States, and they specifically tell them not to interact with Black Americans. Have they told you that as well?
No. What we had in that program was we had that training in New Jersey. And I will always remember what they told us. It was not about hanging out with like other Black people, but it was just more about you never had to say no. You don't have to say no. You always have to say yes or something like that. That was strange to me.
Okay.
To the family, right, well, in the context of the family. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, that was my only question. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Appreciate that, callers. For other folks, if you have questions you'd like to ask Nancy, feel free. Give us a ring. Please do not wait till the last minute. We're winding down like our last 20 minutes or so in the program. If you have a question, let's see. I wanted to make sure I didn't forget from the workplace racism experience. You said that you have a private social media account. However, some of the suspected race soldiers that you worked with were friends with you on your private account, and that generated some problems. Can you give the details?
Yes. So because the environment started to be more and more hostile, because obviously I was not committed to pretend that everything was fine and smiling, I was at home with a certificate from the doctor saying that it can affect my health in general. So I was in burnout. So nonetheless, I will post because, you know, it's my private account, not posting pictures of me being well, but, you know, posting like informations. And when I went back to work, one of the co-worker, which I, you know, she's still a suspect, but to me, she was never like the other, like, meaning she was smiling to me, or she always kept that distance between me and her. But for some reason, she told me, like, yeah, you know, while you were gone, stuffs have been said about you. And I just don't think that it's appropriate. So I just wanted to let you know that regarding your Facebook, because it is private, and they did give information about your private account and saying that you were pretending that you were sick, because how come you are sick and you post thing on the internet, on Facebook? And I was just like in shock, like, wow, I didn't know that I was so important for you that you had to look on my profile. I mean, who does that? I was just like, how come? Never in my mind I will go and see if a person is, if she said that she's sick, if she's posting. I mean, this is your life. So that was the first time that I was like, never again, never, ever again will I allow people of my workplace to be friends, associates with me on Facebook. Really. We'll never do that mistakes again.
Excellent policy. I know Dr. Kamau Kamban, he's been a guest on the program repeatedly. He said that, and I am as well, that just the white friends under any context is horrible. And I would just say work environment, like these are not people that you want to have friends on social media. I've just seen a lot of different black people, especially, and I'd say particularly the last year when everything was going down, the protest, the shooting in Dallas and Philando Castile and all these different events where people were posting about these things on social media, and they ended up getting in trouble. I remember, matter of fact, that black firefighter in Washington, D.C., that was just this past summer, and he was upset about the shootings of black people, and he ended up getting suspended from his job. And I've even seen that's happened to white people. I would not encourage that at all, to not use your social media account, not to use your real name on your social media account if you're going to post about racism, and to definitely, you do not want to be friends with or have it so that people that you work with have easy access to your social media account. It can cause a variety of problems, even if they're just snooping, because I've seen that as well, where they didn't make a big to-do, they didn't fire anybody, but they just said, oh, we will have more surveillance. And they were just going in and taking screenshots of the websites that you're going to and things that you're posting. Just be very cognizant of that with your workplace situation. Also, definitely wanted to ask, and it's kind of like the same type of thing. You talked about how things changed on the job in terms of just being really gung-ho and smiley and not being willing to say no, to put down firm boundaries about things when you first started out and weren't as confused about racism. You also said in some of your, I guess, personal experiences, like you'd have play dates with your son or just white people that you were around where, hey, this racism thing, I'm learning more about it. This is a serious problem, where they too noted a change. We're like, man, we want the old Nancy back. We don't want to just keep hearing you whine and moan about racism. Can you talk about that as well?
So me starting to have more and more understanding of racism, but still not being able to put that in the proper context. So at that time, I know at the work that there's something that is not working well here. Here I am doing all those work and not getting any reward of compensation, like having a full time or, you know, nothing. So I'm like, okay, let's stick to the job description. What am I supposed to do? And I'll just do that. And when I started to say no, the shift started, like, okay. And I could remember well, he told me, you don't want to do that, then you will see. That's what she said to me. And it took 6 months for me to see what she meant by saying that. After 4 years, I was just like wiped out like that. And regarding the friends here in Belgium, the interracial dating is like heavy. It's only that I maybe do have two couples that are black, non-white and non-white, and the other one is it's like white and black. So now that I know more and more about the system, I just start slow, right? I'm just starting to ask more questions. Only that, trying to figure things out and try to put my boundaries. And it started like that with that so-called friends. I was just reminding her that you cannot do X, Y, and Z with me. Like, I don't tolerate that. And I ask a question, specific question. Why are you doing this? How come you think that you can do this with me? And the minute I started to ask questions, the day after, I got an email like, you know, I want the old Nancy, the positive one, the one that always smiling and who's there for me. And now you're asking too many questions. Like, I don't want that. I don't know how I can get along with that. So it was just me asking questions. it was not even me bringing up racism, like telling her the whole definitions. It was just me starting to be like, I don't appreciate that. I would like you to respect what I'm doing, and just that. And it's a person that I used to see often. Yeah, I used to see her with her son. She's in a tragic arrangement, and she was just like, you know, I don't want, I want you like you were. And it's not possible for me to be back the person that I was.
Just asking questions. We have picked that up numerous times. I think that's been the general consensus worldwide. Number one, that white people are very astute in terms of paying attention to changes in their niggers. Are you asking more questions? Are you not laughing and joking as much? Like, they really seem attentive on that. And then also, I think we have just been groomed to not ask questions. Just you being an inquisitive, curious black person, that in and of itself stands out. Because racists, one of their mm-hmm. goals is to totally beat us down from asking questions so that, you know, we just mm-hmm. accept whatever they say. No questions asked. That is the goal of white supremacy racism. I'm trying to nab some of our other callers as well as we go here. The person at 4950, did you have a question for Nancy?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Greetings to the Gus and Miss Nancy. I have one quick question. I want mm-hmm. to know, are there other people in your circle that are less confused, who have awareness of racism, white supremacy, what it is, how it works?
No, unfortunately, no. I'm trying to... I mean, my sister now, she's more willing to listen to me since I started to be more like, you just have to focus on you. Whenever you want to do something, make sure that action will lead you to a constructive result for your life. And when I start to talk more about that, she's more like, yeah, I can understand that. But when it comes to racism, what it is and how it works, she will still have questions, meaning like not all white people are bad. And I'm like, yeah, but they do have to show that they are not bad. And it's up to them, not to you.
And also, how old were you when you first became aware of the system?
I was aware of the system, but still not being able to put that in the proper context, I will say after the United States. After seeing and traveling that, you know, there's something like every black people are struggling. So I was 20, 25, 26.
Okay. That sums it up for my question. Thank you. And wow. Did you do good work? Thanks, Doug.
Thank you.
For sure. The caller at 3246. 3246. Did you have a question for Nancy?
Yes, sir. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Yes. Greetings to you, the host, and to you, Miss Nancy.
Hello. Hello.
Yes. I am a Black American, or mm-hmm. Or however, we're called a lot of different things, but a lot of Africans that I've mm-hmm. met know us as Black Americans. So,
okay,
what can the Black Americans do to build an alliance with the Congolese? Is there anything in your opinion that we can do to build that alliance? And then my, mm-hmm. Well, actually, that'll be my question. Yeah.
Okay. So I will talk to you about an experience when I was in San Francisco. So I wanted to get to know more Black people, right? I was attracted. I've always been attracted to Black people. And I went to those girls that I saw on the mall, in the mall. And I was just like, you know, I'm new. My name is Nancy. I'm here for a year and I would like to get to know you better and, you know, hanging out. And they turned me down. They were just like, not interested. So to respond to your question, I will say, let's start to talk to each other. Yeah, let's talk. Let's start to talk to each other. Just talk. Hi, how are you? My name is this and that, and go from there. But if we are not willing to talk to each other, how is going to be possible? Because I feel like there's always a difference, like you're not an American or you don't have our story. Being Black from Africa is different than being Black in America, and it's not. It's all the same. Yeah, the experience is different, but the results is the same.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Wow. That anti-Blackness, that is one of the chief products of the system of white supremacy, to make sure that Black people despise and mistreat other Black people. And white people have, thus far, they have demonstrated that they are very efficient, very effective at pulling that off worldwide, keeping Black people in conflict mm-hmm. with other Black people and just behaving in a very discourteous, rude manner. That's one of the things right there we can do to that's why I end every program, be patient with other Black people. One of the things that we can do to work through and try to solve this here problem. I definitely wanted to also make sure that we included, because we talked about the playdates and the workplace racism situation, and you know, callers have already mentioned that you being a Black mother, how mm-hmm. has racism, white supremacy impacted your 4-year-old Black son?
So, very recently, my son had to experience racism. So he is in a predominantly white school. Here in Belgium, you have two main languages. You have Dutch and French. And we decided to put him in a Dutch-speaking school because we want to give him more opportunity, knowing also that by learning Dutch, he will be able to speak English as well, because they do have a good language level in the Dutch part of Belgium. And he came back and he started to pointing out the skin of his cousin, which is a heavy melanated little boy, little baby. And he's like, he needs to bath more, you know, mama. And I'm like, you know, tired. I'm like, you know, I don't really understand. And again, on the streets, he's pointing out like some other non-white, and he's telling me again, mama, this man needs to wash himself more, right? I'm like, what? So the second time. And third time, he's like, mama, I need to bat myself more, right? What? Okay, there's a problem. What happened? Who said that to you? Tell me, because that was the very first time we raised our son to love himself, you know, to be centered on himself and
to celebrate it himself. Like, I will say to him, like, you know, mommy doesn't perm her hair. I have my natural hair. Your hair is beautiful. You're beautiful. And we went in Congo for the first time with him the last June. So it was all about showing him that there's nothing wrong with him. So for me to hear him saying, mama, I need to bath more, I'm like, there's no way this could come from here. No way. And I asked him, and he said to me, yeah, that's little boy that I found out later that is a 8 years boy, white. That says and terrified my son, saying that, you know, he's mean and everything. And I was just like torn, like, should I say something? How should I say it? And his dad went to school after school, and he asked Nolan, my son, to show that boy. And the boy, you know, we were able to find him. And when we asked questions, it was just like not saying anything. It didn't say anything. His dad told me that everybody was looking at him when he just went and said, basically, if my son wants to play with you, it's because he wants to play with you. But if you don't want to play with him, that's fine. You don't have to tell him that he needs to bath more, or he needs to, that something is wrong with him, you know? And he said nothing back. So what I did was to write down an email to the teacher telling her that this is what happened. This is what my son told me. What's going on? What would be the best way to talk about it? Because I do want to talk about it, because Nolan, my son, keeps telling me the same thing over and over again. Like, he needs to bath more. Like, he wasn't just feeling comfortable going back home, because he was just like, this little boy is mean with me, mama. And the response of the teacher was, well, he's too young to know what he's saying. I'm sure that the 8 year white boy didn't mean what he says, if he said it. If he said it. Hopefully your son will come back to school and everything will just be fine. So that's the moment I realized, okay, I need to start to be more precise as I'm getting more knowledge of the system, and I need to talk about it. The only thing is, it's hard even for me to put that in the, to start to tell him the system with my words. Because it does not, it's not that it does not understand. I'm sure it does understand, but it's there's so much confusing, because everybody looks nice, right? Everybody looks nice.
Wow. Context of white supremacy. I remember from that incident, the school incident, when we talked about it last week, and you said succinctly, profoundly, you said that incident revealed to you that white people are teaching their children about racism, but you are not teaching your son about counter-racism. Is that, am I remembering that correctly?
Yes, you do. Correct. You do remember correctly. I realized also that, wow, how come? And I guess that was the thing. How come in your home, you start to teach those kind of things. Because the first thing I had in my mind, this kid is you know, a kid, but he did hear that from another person to be able to say that. Because I'm just in shock, because I do not spend a minute in my home to teach my son to have those kind of words for other kids. I was just like, are we too nice? Are we naive? Because obviously it's not enough. I could not protect my son enough. And really that week he was not feeling well. He didn't want to go to school. He did not want to go to school.
Very common experience for black children worldwide. They just had that incident, the 15-year-old black girl. She was slammed in North Carolina by the officer. And, I mean, that seems to be an everyday occurrence around these parts. What would your response be, Nancy? What would your response be to people who say, you know, hey, Nancy, you got Mr. Fuller's book. You had to go through all that trouble. You got his book, and you've been listening to his lectures on Talktainment, and you did a whole podcast about workplace racism, and you got this information. You've been studying for a while. Why do you even have your child in a school with predominantly white children who are likely racist to mistreat your child? And they got, you know, white teachers, too, so the double whammy. Why even do that? Why do you even have your child in that environment?
So, again, I just started to be more and more conscious about it in October, and I got the book in the end of November. So I'm still processing, but now that I know, I'm definitely planning on getting him out of school because there's just no way for me to let him be there. But the challenge that I'm facing right now is his father, that he is still confused, and he's more like, are you going to have the time to be with our son? Because remember, I don't work for now, but the system requires me to find a job. So I have to figure it out. There's definitely a lot of figuring out something. Well, I can protect myself and still being able to take care of myself financially. But that's the goal. I want to homeschool, or like Mr. Nilifu said, like the universe is your school. So I will universally homeschool my offspring. That's the goal. Now that I know what I know that he's in danger. Yeah.
Right on. Right on. That's what happens when you are still learning. As you get new information, we make new goals as we get better information about what's happening in the world around us. So that is phenomenal. Definitely, it'd be great, because since you have your own podcast, which is linked in the description for the program, where folks can check it out and keep up. Maybe you can update on your podcast or come back and visit with us to give us an update, or both. Anything that you definitely want to make sure that you leave with listeners, either something to think about or just something that you would like to make sure you share before we get ready to conclude?
Yeah, I would just like to say, really take care of yourself. What do you do with your time and your energy? I've been trying to revise as much as I could in all the different areas in my life. It is not going to be an overnight success, but I am in that process. It does take time. And yeah, if Others may have suggestions on how to heal, especially after my experience in that workplace environment, because I realized that it's something that will stick with me forever. Like, I still have that anxiety whenever I have to deal with a possible new workplace environment. So yeah, any tips will be greatly appreciated, because we do have traumas, and sometimes I was thinking that it's okay, it happens, now I move on. But now I am in a place where I cannot move on any longer. Even for my son's situation, I cannot stay quiet and be like, okay, we'll pass. I have to do something. But it's hard. It is hard.
Absolutely. Racists intend for it to be difficult, which, in my opinion, just further underscores the importance of being very mindful with our use of time and energy, because we have so many problems, so many things that we can and should be doing that we cannot afford to waste time on, you know, just frivolous things that are, you know, what's on television today, and, you know, what's MTV's new spot. I mean, we have got big problems in terms of Black people worldwide that we need to focus on. So use of time and energy, critical in 2017 and beyond. As I said, hopefully either we can get you on the Global Sunday Talk on Racism, the monthly broadcast that we've been doing for a while, where you can share some of your views and what have you there. And you could just come back to visit to give us the update. That would be great. And I know folks will likely be tuning into your podcast as you update and continue to learn more about racism and share. So definitely we will be eagerly anticipating hearing as you continue to evolve and create your own counter-racist code. And just sharing information. I think that's great as well, just having folks in other parts of the world so we can see the similarities in terms of how individuals classified as white, how they function, and how they have a lot of the same racist behavior patterns. It's glaring, and hopefully as we have more people in different parts of the world sharing on the program, that'll become more apparent. But thank you so much for taking some time out of your evening. I know super busy as a parent and everything that you have going on over there, but taking some time out of your Wednesday evening to speak with us. I hope it was worthy of your time and energy, and we just really appreciate you being courageous enough to come on and share about some of your personal experiences and being victimized, and hopefully some of the folks listening in, help them get a better understanding of what racism is, how it works.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Nancy. For listeners, we'll be here tomorrow, normal broadcast time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, for Workplace Racism, just mentioned. We'll be looking forward. If you have incidents, you can certainly email in or you can call, but we'll be looking forward to that. This Friday, we are starting The Delectable Negro, brand new book, just getting started this Friday. One of our listeners is doing the narration for the project, but that's also normal program time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, and then the compensatory call-in this Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. If you have questions, if you can't find something in the archives, if you have a guest suggestion, whatever the case, feel free to drop an email untiljustice@gmail.com. untiljustice@gmail.com. Thanks to all the folks who called in, listened in. I know we are on way earlier than we normally would be, but it'll be in the archives, so even if you couldn't listen live, you can catch it on iTunes, Black Talk Radio, Stitcher, wherever you listen to the cows at. With that, I'm going to get prepping for tomorrow's broadcast. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Thank you, Nancy, for sharing some of your time, and I hope your adorable son, allergies are all gone, and he's healthy and doing great. We will definitely look forward to speaking with you soon and having you back on the program.
Thank you very much.
For sure. Sobriety would be best. Listeners say that each broadcast. I've seen no evidence that us having a beer or a glass of wine, tobacco, any other narcotics, I've seen no evidence that that's going to help us neutralize the problem with racist man, racist woman, racist child. Sobriety would be best under conditions of war. And that is exactly what white supremacy racism is. It is war against non-white people, especially black people. With that, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cow signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.